here on?
Yes.
It would not increase?
No. That would remain constant.
That would be a fixed cost.
But the total rate that the employers pay may increase.
Well, I'm not talking about the rate, I'm just talking about the cost of this. But we haven't determined whether the employer's rate is going to change as a result of this. If the assumption rate changed, the employer rate wouldn't have to change.
The assumption rate.
That's all I want to know. So there's no other effect.
But it does not take just the assumption rate to change for the employer's rates to go down, and they have gone down. It's been 10 years since we changed the assumption rate, but they've gone down often, depending on the earnings, right?
The rate is less today than it was X number of years ago. The rate was higher, it has been reduced. That primarily is because of the increased earnings that they've made beyond the 7.5%.
Did you want to add something?
Senator Roberts, I was wondering, was your question with the 1.5?
No.
Cost increase?
Not the, would there be a changed dollar amount? We've got a dollar amount here, which is independent of rate, $6.3 million annually. And my question is, would this continue to be, as a result of this bill, continue to be a $6.3 million greater payment than we would have without Senate Bill 573?
Yes, that's correct. And there would be a slight increase in that, and that increase would be the 2% cost of living increase that is already in the bill. So it would increase by 2% each year.
Yes, okay.
But it would be.
And the base would be that much larger upon which the 2% were applied.
That's correct.
Okay.
So 6.3.
I think that the dollar amount is based on the employer's contribution. The employer's contribution is based on the salaries of active employees. So the dollar amount would go up as the salaries of the employees goes up.
But the payments under this bill would not go up.
Because
the people already retired.
Yeah,
right. Yes, but the employer contribution and the cost that is identified here for funding the benefit is paid by active employees.
Right.
Is paid by employers on the basis of the salaries of their current employees.
Oh yeah. All right.
So that.
Yeah, we have to constantly separate revenue from expenditures.
Right. By doing this, this is one of the ways you guarantee you get some money to the beneficiaries. If you have really good earnings, why it sort of automatically goes that the employer's rates are reduced if you have really good earnings, because that happens. The only way you get any money that comes from these good earnings to the beneficiaries, other than that 2%, which is not enough to keep up with inflation, is to do this every so often, to make sure you get them there rather than the other place. Remember, this fund is earning a lot more than we're, well, I can't say that. I better shut up. I'm not sure.
One other comment.
Again, we're back to the assumption.
But it's earning quite a bit.
One of the comments that I would make.
And it's subsidizing and keeping the employer's rates down and not going to the beneficiaries.
Turn it over. Is that the assumed interest rate, of course, will not change prior to the adjournment of this legislative session. There's a meeting by the board at 26, and they're not going to.
And there won't be any.
And they won't until after this evaluation.
And if that happens, there won't be any reduction to the employers. Is that what you're saying?
No, there won't.
Because sometimes you have a reduction without changing the assumed rate.
Because of that, I would suggest that, as in the past, the legislature make a commitment to try to work on this problem by implementing 50% of what they're behind. 25 beginning in July 1 of 1989, and another 25% of that July 1, 1990, which would be 50%, which would be more in line with the ad hoc increases that they have made in the past. And a little over 10% of the current rate is for previous.
Why argue for a half increase? Just why argue for the half loaf? Why
yeah. Is because I believe that
we can't get it passed.
There are I believe there are
for good reasons
indications from people that are on the retirement board. I believe there are indications from the various offices within this structure that would be receptive, that may be excuse me, that may be receptive to this, that are not receptive to the 100%. I don't think we, and being honest politically, I don't think we can pass 100%.
The politics of it.
The politics of it, I'm not saying.
Let's again, without talking about the merits of it, let's see exactly what that proposal does. Essentially, what all it does is to decrease the, in effect, the impact on the reserve, if we want to call it that, by $3.2 million. That's all it does. Because in the second year of the biennium, it was 6.3. In the third year after this, it would be 6.3 and so forth. So all it does is reduce the total impact by that amount.
And then I believe that if we can get to the study and the assumed interest rate adjustment, I think the money will be there.
Yeah, we'll confuse things. I'm just trying to keep the, lay out the facts with reference to what it would be. That is, if you didn't try to pay for this by an increased payroll tax, by an increased contribution by the employers. But if you just took it out of the fund, that would be the difference between the two proposals. It would be $3.2 million less overall, total, roughly, other than forgetting about that 2%
What's the, I guess, a question? I'd like to put this $6.3 million that this would cost up against the earnings of the fund for 1 year. What's the total amount of the earnings of the fund for 1 year, last year, the latest year we had? What did it earn? That 13%, what did that earn us? What, in terms of millions?
I think about $800 million they earned last year.
They earned $800 million. We're asking for six to go to the beneficiaries. Okay. That's one way of looking.
Well, you got to be cautious on that. We've got into the reserves.
That's just the earnings, though. Yeah. You that's not the reserves. That's the earnings.
Well, the earnings are going toward building the funding, full funding of the obligations that are incurred according to actuarial rates.
Sure.
So you are, and we know that those are based upon these assumptions as to what the interest will be over the period of the 30 years.
I believe, and Mr. McDonald can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that right now at the rate, the fund is funded at about 93%.
It's between 90% and 93%, Mr. Chair. Sorry.
Between 90% and 93%.
It went down in the last...
It went backward a little bit.
I'm not sure why I understand what you're talking about.
That if everything fell apart today and we all retired, 93% of the bill, or approximately between 91% and 93% of the bill could be paid.
Because of the reserves.
We're in debt.
It means that it's not fully funded.
It's close.
Still got to come up with, I think Meeker threw out $600 million or some dollars that we have to come up with
to be fully funded.
In order to pay the bills that we've incurred.
Assuming you had no more income.
Right, assuming the world stopped.
The world stopped and you paid off all the present obligations, you'd be short seven.
Future.
And is seven the goal, percent. Do any of them ever have 100% of reserves?
Ours is extremely high.
It's extremely high. Okay, so you can't say that's an indication then that
no.
we're in bad health.
No, but you probably would be safer rather than, say, take it out of reserves would be to put in here a clause saying that you're extending where you want a fully funded fund out an additional amount of time.
I believe you do need to ask the actuary, because for some reason in the back of my mind, I think they made that adjustment, the board, last time and moved it out to 30 years. I think we bumped up against that last time, if I'm not mistaken.
It was moved out, and I don't remember that.
I think it was last time moved out to 30 years.
Moved out to 30. So
I think we moved it.
We already bumped it once.
I think we made that bump last time.
What does that
mistaken.
Mean? We moved what out to 30?
Whether we fully funded.
Yeah, the actuary
Well, what you're saying is that the present, if you use the present assumption rate of 7.5%, at the present payments into the fund, it would take 30 years to fully fund it.
Correct.
That's all, just simply means that.
Well, and that 30 years started way back. That 30 years is...
We were down to about 19, but I think last time they bumped it out to 30. I believe that.
Yes, that's...
Is that 30 years from now?
No, 30 years from 2 years ago.
30, so it's 28 years.
That may be probably 29 by the time the board took action.
All right, 28 or 29 years from now, if you continue to... If you earn no more than 7.5% and no less than 7.5% for 29 years, and you had the same obligations we now have, the assumption would be that it will, that there'd be enough in the fund to meet that.
That's correct.
But since the reality is you earn a hell of a lot more than that every 10 years, what does that mean?
What does that
mean? Well, there is no reality in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
The only reality is the present.
Can I quote you on that?
Well, I hear you very good account statement.
You know that we live around here predicting the future and appropriating on predictions,
right.
Prognostication.
2 years.
And, yes, and two,
on 2 years.
Right, 2 years. But that's a risky 2 years. And we make commitments that are a lot longer than 2 years, and we all know it. And that's all made based on prognostications, and basically what you use to predict the future is your track record in the past. 10 years track record shows...
I don't know whether anybody here, we did have a figure, I think that Fred gave us some comment a few minutes ago, that to assume this 6.3 million a year without any increase in employer payments would have what effect upon the estimate of full funding?
Mr. Chairman, I really...
How many days would it increase?
It's very tough to answer. It would not be very substantial.
Okay.
I really can't answer that, but it's not going to have a drastic effect.
Would it have a perceptible effect?
Probably not.
Okay, thank you. See, that's what you're driving at, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm driving at.
Let's continue with the testimony. We've got 10 more minutes. I promised the committee that we would adjourn at 11.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Association of Oregon Faculties. To try, in the interest of saving some time, and you have a number of bills which the PDRS coalition is supportive of, let me touch upon some of the priorities there that I think reflect all of our positions, although individually we may be looking at one over the other in terms of priority. You've discussed one today, which is the ad hoc increases, and you have a bill which attempts to bring that to 100%. There are obviously different options that have been suggested in that area. Another bill that you have before you is what we term 30 years and out. That is a very, very high priority from AOF's point of view. It's highest priority for other groups. It may be second or third. You also have the issue of...
You said it's first priority for you?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman. You have another issue which has been discussed, which is the concept of increasing, giving a cost of living increase for the Medicare supplement package. That has been, there have been numerous discussions ranging from $70 in the first year to $90 in the second year. There's also been some recent discussions setting that at 60. You have, I think firefighters have a number of disability types of issues which are not before this committee at this time. But those three issues, the ad hoc, the 30 and out, and the Medicare supplement, from AOF's point of view, are our priority types of issues. And you should be aware that there have been, to my knowledge, a number of discussions with the governor's office, the executive department, the Department of Insurance and Finance on some of these PERS issues. They, of course, do not involve this body at this point, but for the executive department to try and the governor to arrive at what they would support and would not support. My understanding is that they would support the 30 and out. they would support a concept of increasing the Medicare supplement to $60, and that they would support one-half of the ad hoc increase.
Some guarantee that the other half would come sometime?
It's my understanding that that was not part of their discussions, although, of course, from our point of view, we would anticipate or would wish for that that would be something in everyone's goal to get to the 100%. I want to reflect that is the my understanding of the executive department and the governor's position on those increases. As you know, there was some reluctance earlier in the session for any change in PERS which would increase the rate to the employer. But we would like to see the 100% ad hoc increase. But we certainly concur in the 30 and out and Medicare supplement.
All right. Mr. Mendenhall, were you up here for some purpose? Other than to embellish the panel?
Mr. Chair, Chuck Mendenhall, representing the Oregon Public Employees. For the record, sitting here for the last couple of hours with three professors and a prophet, listening to the discussion, and the two deans of the lobby here, I don't think that there's a lot left to be said. So I concur with the package of bills that Mark Nelson has just enumerated, and with that, I think I would conclude my comments.
In that particular order, Chuck?
The package, I don't know that I have priorities within that package, but yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mark, do you know with that combination of bills right there that you've listed, assuming that we were to go along with all of those, what the effect upon the actuarial situation would be then? What I'm most concerned about is the medical possibly walking away from us as the most, you know, and we've talked about that. That's a tough issue. To get that up and get that program moving, we had to work considerably last time, and we want to make that work well, and we've had to move the fund back and handle it, how to do that correctly. But to get some impact now so we can build a good case and get these bills passed, we'd need to know what the effect actuarially upon the fund is.
If I could comment very quickly, Don Satchel, OEA, in speaking with the actuary states that with the amount of money that was set aside last time, $350 million, which has grown in interest to $400 plus million, that you could go to $60 a month payment, so increase from $50 to $60.
Okay.
And that would not result in any increase or decrease in the employer rate. But what you've already done 2 years ago.
So the interest is money. Coming in enough on that to pay, take care.
Interest has come in enough so that you could move the payment, monthly payment, from $50 to $60, and there would be no employer increase. If you do nothing, then there will be a reduction in the employer rate because of the, not excess, but the additional money that's there, so that there would be no cost whatsoever.
Mr. Chairman.
If that's true, if it's no cost to the employer, why don't we just simply have an escalation that only covers the increase in interest off that fund, that the amount then would grow over time, so you don't have to come back and pass a bill each time?
I made that proposal earlier this year to the Ways and Committee, Ways and Means Committee, and it.
I thought we had to.
Didn't get very far.
We couldn't separate those two things, and one had to go back into the other. And so, just like all the other earnings, those earnings are not tied to this particular program. Yes, indeed, that money earns, and earns well because it's back in the total, and the total's earning and earning well, but it's not tied. So you're paying for this with an employer payment based on some formula that doesn't relate back to those earnings.
According to the general,
that's part of the problem of the whole problem.
According to the Attorney General, we could have put it back in to the system and created the fund reserve fund, which the board has diagrammed out. The problem was that in creating it originally, we put employee and employer money into that. The employee money was illegal, so now it has to be reconstituted with just employer funds. So it could be reestablished. However, we don't have that large of a source of just employer funds. So it would take them longer than 30 years to rebuild it with the money that's there.
I'm sort of hesitant to go much into these bills that we aren't actually hearing today to cover them, but I'm appreciative of your statements about your priorities.
One of the bills that you are
hearing. I sort of checked with the members. Can you stay a while longer?
Yeah.
All right. We'll stay longer then. We don't seem to have any objection.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that the actuary will have his numbers and may be available. I think the discussion earlier in the week was for Thursday, I think with one or both of the co-chairs, and maybe you, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure, Don, but that he would be available to provide numbers to this committee.
By Thursday?
By yes. Thursday.
All right. I hope that the next time that we do have a hearing on the bills, we will have been able to. This was sort of a very last-minute decision made yesterday, actually, that this committee would get the bills. And so we haven't had enough preparation for to make sure. What I'd like to do today is to make sure that we have identified the data that we need to have presented to the committee before we can actually think about taking any action on the bills. And we have gotten some material, some information here on 573. We got what was, to me at least, a little confused information on 211. I just want to make sure that the bills, that insofar as possible, we can identify the information that we need to make sure we have before another hearing on the various bills that we have before us. So are we far enough along here?
Can I make a couple quick comments about House Bill 2849, which is also on your agenda?
All right.
This is the 30 and out.
30 and out.
30 and out.
Yeah, you're only 10 years too late.
30 years of service at any age is the most common provision in the retirement systems that we currently have in the United States. Oregon is behind considerably. According to the former director of PERS and testifying this spring before the Labor Committee, she stated 37 or 39 of the systems in the United States currently provide for 30 years of age and out. We do have some that are slightly better than that.
30 years of service and out?
30 years of service and out.
Excuse me, did you say 39 states have systems?
37, 39 of the systems have.
These are the state provision. Systems.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. The thing that we have to take in consideration also.
By the way, there's a lot more systems. They aren't all single systems. So 39 out of how many systems?
39 out of about 70 some systems that were reported.
Thank you.
In addition to that, approximately 48 of the systems provide a higher benefit in that they provide 2% or more as a index factor. So my indication, what I'm trying to say, is that our system is not out of line in the benefits that we're providing. Our system actually, in the amount of benefits that we are providing in comparison to the other systems, is below the median at the current time. It's a good system. I don't want to indicate that it isn't a good system. It's a very good system. It's either the number one or within the top probably three or four in funded systems. It's a very healthy system. We want to make sure it stays that way. That's probably, of all anything else, maybe the most important thing at this time.
But also it's created to provide some benefits to people to keep them secure in their old age.
Yes.
And so that's one of the obligations. We need
true.
To remember that.
I did pass out a white sheet which lists four school districts and spread them across the state. Lake Oswego, Grants Pass, Astoria, and Ontario. There is a cost increase on the payroll tax of PERS. However, to the individual district, there is an immediate money savings. And we look at those four examples, and it would show what would occur if a teacher who was at the top of the salary schedule, if they had 30 years in, they would be at the top of the salary schedule, replaced by a beginning teacher. And that makes the assumption, when I talk about beginning teacher here and the amount of money savings, is the first-year teacher. If they hire a teacher with more experience, the savings would be less. So that is financially a significant savings. And you have an actuarial cost.
Let me stop you.
Yes.
It's a significant savings to one group of employers covered by PERS, but not necessarily to others.
Okay. In talking with Yonkers in regards to the state system, that is correct. However, there is a savings as we go down in salaries, the saving is not as great, because in practically all of our systems, we have some type of increased salaries because of experience or time on the job.
In the state system, it's being argued by the directors that it costs more to hire to replace a professor than it does to keep that professor on because of the competitive situation.
In certain fields.
Well, it depends. It depends on who you're replacing with what.
Yeah. Depends upon who you're listening to, whether you're listening to the state system talking about the needs for tremendous salary increases.
If you want to get somebody with equal expertise and equal training, or better training and better expertise, probably going to cost more. But if you're going to take a full professor in history and replace that full professor with an assistant professor in history, it's going to cost less.
Well, that would reduce the quality of the system, though.
Probably would, but it happens all the time.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This also would provide some real assistance that would help in school districts that are in the safety net. And what has taken place here is that these school districts have been in economic difficulties for some time, and they have laid off teachers. The teachers that are laid off are the beginning teachers. The experience level on their staff has increased, and so the teachers they have are the teachers that are towards the top of the salary schedule. And as they continue to lay off teachers, they will be laying off the least experience, and the salary cost will go up. I was in Redmond recently, which is a safety net district. This, of course, was a major interest to them. There were 7 teachers that qualified for this piece of legislation, all of which indicated they would immediately retire, and probably from Redmond they would. That would be economically a major assistance to that district.
I think there's no question about the fact that a system which is based upon pay which reflects seniority. Do you have any figures on employment of employers around the state other than teachers, which reflects the degree to which the pay is based upon seniority?
No. The only group that I worked with were teachers, and I talked with the state financial director, Yonkers, as far as the state is concerned, but as far as the other entities, no.
Could you take legislators? They're all paid the same.
Be no distinct advantage of them.
And
it's a few exceptions.
Most state employees are based upon a classification system, not upon length of service.
But the classification system takes them upward. It's a step system, so that the bottom step and the top step are different.
That's right. There'd be some savings.
Mr. Chairman, I think, however, that you would find in looking at the bottom step and the top step of state employee salaries, non-teacher, that the composition of the employees in that steps and those steps would remain the same. Somebody in the top step leaves, they're usually not replaced with somebody in a bottom step. They're usually replaced with somebody that comes up from the fifth step, and then you go on, and so you end up having a composition of employees that looks pretty much like it was previously, and if it's in a higher level salary in executive service or high-level management service, then most often those people are hired in at the top step anyway. So I don't think that, whereas it might be clear in the teaching field, I think in the state employees field, that would not be the case.
Representative Peters.
Thank you. I guess I want to follow that up a little. You talked about what the savings would be to the, to teachers, to that particular profession. What, has anyone played with the figures about how many people overall might fit into this category that had 30 years but were still, under 55, and what kind of impact that would have and how it fits in?
Yes, the actuary does have the numbers of the people that would qualify for that. And his numbers that he has selected to drive the cost is a percentage of those people that would actually select that option. So yes, that information is available, and he would be able to provide it.
So we're just going to have to wait till we hear from the actuary.
Actuary has indicated his figures are based on 20% of the
20% of the people that are eligible
opting to do that.
And have we gotten an increase in the employer's rate based on that projection?
Yes.
How much would that be?
That's in Senate Bill